Hi, kids. I'm noted celebrity Zachary Ty Bryan. You all remember me as the oldest brother on Home Improvement, and therefore the best brother. I'm here today to tell you all about an amazing shape called the icosahedron, which has 30 awesome edges and 20 rad equilateral triangle facings with 5 meeting at each of its 12 vertices. Wait, what?
Wow, that sounds really complicated, Zachary.
No, it's super simple. It's got 30 edges, and each one of them leads into an equilateral... Wait, hang on.
What's an equilateral?
Okay, so you remember on Home Improvement how sometimes my dad, Mr. Tim Allen, would get sort of mad, and he'd say, hey, I know I can do this. There's a metaphor for equilateral. It's a really special kind of triangle, and each one of the sides loves the other ones very much.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, okay, so there's 12 of those, and they come together at vertices?
What's a vertices?
Oh, things ain't so good for old Zachary Ty Bryan anymore.
Here, I'll help you out, Zachary.
Oh, fuck! Vampires! Vampires are real! No! I don't want to die!
Here, let me help you count.
Give me that stick, Elmo! Give me the goddamn stick! I'm gonna kill him! I'll kill the van! No, get back! Get back!
What are you doing?
I'll use it! Don't make me use it!
Look, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Wait, I think he's
7.
Counting the icosahedron?
8,
this is weird.
9.
I'm just gonna 10, fucking stab him. Stab!
Oh no! My soft Muppety body! Oh!
No, he's not disintegrated. Oh no! Oh no!
What did you do, Zachary?
Nothing, man. You didn't see nothing.
I'm calling the cops.
Oh, I'm gonna go have to ask Wilson for advice.
Sesame Street has been brought to you today by the letters A and R, and by the number 6.
Welcome to Afterthought, the companion podcast to System Mastery, where every other week we get together and talk to you, the listener, about stuff of interest or otherwise. I'm Jeff.
Are you getting real Shatner? Is that Shatner disease you got getting worse?
I got that Shatnerisms. I got that Shatnerosis.
Yeah, I had to send a picture to my doctor. He told me I was getting that Shatner's disease.
It's a real coincidence that it got named after William Shatner. Also, he suffers from it.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
I know. It existed for years before him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Strange that it came up, and all of a sudden...
It's just one of those coincidences, like Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yeah, Lou Gehrig's disease, again, coincidental. Real sad that Lou Gehrig suffered from it. Weird that it was named that in advance.
Yeah, it was almost prophetic.
Yeah. Right, Crohn's disease, originally just named after creepy old ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah, strange. These things happen. Anyway, I'm Jeff. That's John right over there interrupting my flow.
Yeah, your hustle and flow.
My hustle and Menzies.
Oh, I get it.
Way worse.
I get it.
Way worse movie, though.
Flow.
Yeah, flow.
Yeah, my hustle and progressive.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Flow.
I'm so sorry I'm not in a great mood right now. My aunt's menstrual discharge is in town.
Oh, that'd be so much better. I don't think we need any sort of like dumb little ways to get around saying that. Just be like, oh well, it looks like it's Menzies week. And you're just like, what?
Yeah. Or I actually kind of prefer the hybrid where you start as if you're gonna make sort of a way to get around it, a little friendly euphemism for it. Oh, ladies, I'm so sorry, but I'm afraid it's just that time of my week when I'm bleeding from my vagina.
Anyway,
let's get started. What did we review last week?
Oh, we reviewed feng shui.
Feng shui, the game named after furniture arrangement.
Yay. We didn't, get to talk about everything we wanted to on there.
Yeah, it's true. So honestly, the topic of discussion for this week could easily be stuff we missed.
Oh, yeah. Well, the big one, outside of just a couple little rules and character creation, things like that, which we covered in the bonus content, really one of the big things that we didn't really get time to get to was the DM advice section.
Yes, that
which
is true.
Rad. It's
revolutionary, like, considering this game came out in 1996.
Oh, yeah, and there's a ton of stuff in there. There's just pages and pages of advice. And normally, when we review a book and we get to the DM advice section, it is a gold mine of terrible ideas.
Yeah, I mean, like, punishing the players up from the DM's perspective, that kind of stuff that's like, hey, did one of your players get a cool thing? Make sure every time he uses it, it hurts him or something.
Yeah, just all these ways to hurt your players or make sure they don't find out too much. And if they try to game the system, punish them. And
keep everything on the exact same sort of status quo line. If anyone gets a +1 sword, they probably shouldn't have that.
Yeah.
But that game's got a not just sort of easy flow of like, oh, let your players do awesome stuff all the time, but also it's got let your players set the scene.
Yeah, like one of the big things is instead of just being very much about that whole theater of the mind, which it is, he says, the reason we don't really want maps to be shown to players, even if you have them, is because we want them focused on their character, focused on what they're doing, and let them come up with the room. So if you say, hey, you're in a room, and then you put down a map that shows where every piece of furniture is and how big it is and where everyone's standing, then it doesn't let your player just randomly decide, oh, also, there's a chandelier here, and I swing on it and karate kick a guy in the face.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't say, like, no, point out to the player that there isn't a chandelier in this house, because this house is from the Jacobean period of England's development, when chandeliers were considered unnecessarily austere.
Also, make sure to look at their sheet and see if they have chandelier swinging as a skill. They'll need to roll that first.
I'm afraid I just have skill fucking the dog.
That's good.
All right, so yeah, that was. It's very, very nice to break into an RPG and see that kind of advice that's like, hey, involve everyone. This is creative storytelling. Let everyone be creative.
I also really liked, there's a little section where they talk about self-referentiality in the game and the tone for the game, where a lot of times he was like, you know, your players, because this is sort of an over-the-top and very different role-playing game than they're used to, they may be very inclined to either have their characters, like, meta know that they're sort of in an action movie and try and play that up.
Meta know, that's a Pokemon, right?
Yeah, meta know.
Yeah, I feel like that's some kind
of,
like,
and if you catch it, it breaks your game.
If you catch it, it explains intersectionality to you.
So it has a whole thing in there, like, you know, don't have your players just continually say, like, lines from various action movies, and also, while there are jokes in the book and it's sort of a lighthearted take, it's not a comedy game. It's not a spoof of action films. Mm. It really wants you to, like, have a love letter to action films rather than, oh, aren't these so stupid?
Yes. Yeah, and it wants you to create your own new ones. So it's got some great advice, you know, like John was just saying about, like, hey, did your guy say yet another line from Die Hard? Like, you know, let him do that, but let's try and push him in a new direction.
Yeah.
So I thought that was very clever. That was very well done. We had some minor quibbles about the game as well. You know, the kind of whiplash of encountering the very first template in the game of being a cybernetic future demon.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
It was weird, but you know what? What were they going to do to fix that? Because it's alphabetical order. I mean, unless you had, like, the first class as an abacus enthusiast. Aardwolf cosplayer. Actually, you know what? I feel like that would have been a great way to do it. Make your first class, first template in the book, be something utterly useless and stupid, and just use it as an explanation of how the template works.
Yeah, an aardvark.
Yeah.
You play as an actual literal aardvark.
He plays a literal cannibal aardvark.
Actual cannibal aardvark.
It only eats other aardvarks, though, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it does it, seeing as how aardvarks can't open their mouths or anything. All they
can
do
he's real talented.
He's amazing.
That's some aardvark.
Crunchy. I feel like every time Charlotte spun something in the web, it just made me want to eat Wilbur more.
Yeah, every single time.
She's always like, wonderful. And I'm like, wow, that pig tastes wonderful. Man, move out of the way. Let me eat that pig. Radiant. Ooh, I'm going to feel radiant after I eat that pig. Let's get that pig cracked open so I can eat it.
Radiant? Oh my God, that pig is radioactive. We got to kill it and get it out of here.
We got to kill it and eat it so we can be radioactive.
I want to get some superpowers out of that.
That's some pig. Ooh, that's some pig I can eat.
It certainly is some pig.
I didn't notice it until I saw that sign.
It's not a specific pig. It's just some pig. I'm fine with eating some pig.
Yeah, it's not like it has a name. Yeah, every time. Every time, Charlotte. The only one who didn't get it right was Crunchy. I don't want a crunchy pig.
No one wants some crunchy pig.
Yeah, that's what they should have done. They should have listened to whatever that rat, that stupid rat voiced by Paul Lynde in the cartoon was like.
Damn you, Paul Lynde rat.
Just let that rat say whatever and put that up there. Just crunchy.
Stank bottom.
Not campy enough. And you'd be like, man, I don't want to eat a crunchy pig that has stank bottom and isn't very campy.
Man. There's one thing I want. It's a clean-bottomed, scampy pig that is soft and moist.
Scampy pig?
Yeah. You get that pig, you put it in some butter and lemon. baby. You got some good eating going on.
Put another pig on the Barbie.
Man, what the fuck are we talking about?
Pigs?
Oh, okay.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, we were talking about the feng shui RPG DM advice section. And of course,
there we go.
That, of course, explains why we're making fun of the cartoon Charlotte's Web and not the book Charlotte's Web.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it's got a bunch of really good advice in there. Stuff that even now, I mean, I looked at some of the stuff for the second edition, and they definitely stripped even more stuff down, got to sort of the core. They fixed that weird action economy thing that we were harping on.
Yeah, I think they probably also fixed the one other thing I was harping on that didn't make it into the episode, which is that I felt like the first edition Karate Cop was garbage. I was all set to make one. That's what my bonus character was going to be, a Karate Cop. And I was like, wait a minute, these guys don't get any kung fu shticks or any gun shticks, and they have less skills and stats. What happened here? Did they just forget when they were making this one?
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, especially for the Karate Cop. You'd expect that one to be real good, seeing as how it's kind of the core of the game.
Yeah, oh well.
What are you going to do? There's a second edition coming out. It's a minor quibble at best.
Yeah, so, but then even if you like have the old edition, it's still got a lot of good stuff in there, so you can still read it and find some good advice for your modern games.
Oh, yeah, it's super playable. And again, this is a game that came out in 96.
Yeah, that is a time period where, man, it was just a wasteland of game design.
Yeah, this was the time period where Image Comics was coming out with Kill Murder, the Dozer Festival.
I remember when I went to the Dozer Festival the first time. I kept eating these little sticks made out of sugar. It was the best.
That's a great... God damn, that's a pull.
The deepest of cuts.
Made out of rutabaga, as I recall. Also, aren't those doozers?
Maybe.
I believe they are doozers. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure you're talking about the doozers.
Pretty sure now, you're talking about doozers,
yeah.
Jeff.
Pretty sure.
Damn it, I quote you.
You quoted me. No, you see, I never actually made it to Doozer Fest because I was always up at Gorgapalooza.
Nah, man. That shit's too weird for me. I like my Doozer Fest. Get together. It's very, very low key. A lot of industrial bands.
And I've also been to Traveling Matt Stock.
Ah, that's a good one.
I can just keep doing these. I know a lot about Fraggles.
Tell me what you know about Fraggles.
What you know about Fraggles.
What you know about Fraggles. God damn it.
I said my Wembley be popping. My Moki be cool. No, God damn. That's going to be the first line in my OK Cupid profile from now on. I know an awful lot about Fraggles.
What you're good at? I know a lot about Fraggles.
Six things I can't live without. Wembley, Moki, Boober, Red.
Ladies, huh?
My iPhone, friends.
The internet, the doozers. Oh my God.
That dog can see me, but no one else can see me. Oh, Christ. You want to answer some questions and get away from whatever this is?
Yeah, let's try and get to something that's mildly structured. Because I think we've lost all semblance.
You know what? That was definitely the problem with Gorgapalooza, was that it was not very well structured.
Yeah.
I feel like there were like eight bands playing at the same time.
Yeah, you had to go to Mochicella.
Mochicella.
There you go.
I love it. All right, moving on. Okay, here we go with some questions from some listeners.
Yay, first, listener questions.
Got so many of these off Reddit this time. Thank you, Reddit. Let's get this going.
Yay, r/System Mastery. Get in there.
Heck yeah. Fuzzy Gundam asks, how big are each of your Steam libraries? What percentage of your owned games have you played? How many of those have you only played for 30 minutes and then never again? And how guilty does that make you feel?
Well, my Steam library is pretty big.
Yeah, I know how big mine is because I saw this question when I was assembling them. There are 67 games in my Steam library.
I have so many games in my Steam library.
Mm-hmm.
I've played most of them.
Yeah, the only ones I haven't played are some ones I bought on a whim from Humble Bundles.
Yeah, there are a few Humble Bundle games where it just came with stuff that I did not care about.
Yeah, like I got that when they were doing a Star Wars Humble Bundle and had like 12 Star Wars games in it. And I was like, oh, there's several of these that I either fondly remember or that I always wanted to try. And also, it comes with a bunch of Star Wars games I couldn't give two shits about, but I don't care because it's $6.
Yeah.
So I have a ton of those. I'd say other than the few games out of my Humble Bundle library that I haven't played, and those include a few Star Wars games and a few of those platformers that are supposed to be like designed to be super hard, like what if Mario could just kick your ass all day long?
Oh, then you've read my fic.
Don't get up. It's me elbowing you.
Yeah, the I think most of them I've played at least a little bit. If not for, like, you know, a couple minutes. I think, like, I got Super Meat Boy in one of them, played it for, like, 2 minutes, went, oh, this game is garbage, I don't care.
I don't remember the name of it, but I just bought one that was, like, supposed to... all my friends were describing it, like, on Facebook, were describing it as Mass Effect meets Firefly, and it's, like, supposed to be a space Firefly simulator. And it turned out it was a naval combat space game that I just did not care for.
Yeah.
They were like, it's just like Firefly, and I'm like, nah, fuck you, it is. Firefly doesn't have naval broadsides combat. And why would you do that in space? I mean, granted, the real question of space combat is why aren't you just entirely fighting with missiles from so far away that you can't see each other instead of flying in and doing broadsides on each other?
Ah, because that's boring.
I know it is, but ultimately that game is really boring too. I mean, it looked really good. It had a really cool, it had great music, it had a great concept, but man, I hate on some straight up old school pirate style combat unless it's actual pirate ships.
Yeah, I was about to say, man, you love that Black Flag.
Man, Black Flag is my jam 10 times over. It's my favorite Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah.
It's so good. Anyway, moving on. So you go, about 60 on mine. I don't feel guilty about it at all because I'm just spending your money on it, Patreon subscribers.
The only one I actually felt guilty that I bought and then never played was KOTOR. I bought that for like $1 and went, oh man, everyone loves KOTOR, and then I tried to start it up and made a character and then immediately stopped caring.
Oh yeah, because it's old.
Old as balls.
Yeah, you get that rose tint glasses when you play a game like that when you're a little kid. You're like, man, these are some amazing graphics. I can't wait to play this game again when I'm an adult. And then you do and you're like, man, Cloud looks like he's made out of marshmallows and sticks. What is happening? How come I used to think Tifa looked like a person? She looks like one of those things in Zelda that wants to eat my shield. What is even happening in this dumbass game? Why are we running around on 5 paintings that one of them says Averil on it?
Oh, yeah, man. You go back and you play that FF7 and you are just sad.
Yeah, and you're like, man, how many people are obsessing over the characters in this game again? How did that happen?
Cinematics. That's how that happened.
Yeah. All right, so there you go. Let's move on. First question to us from Havoc4, and Havoc4 asks, there are a lot of stupid character concepts, but sometimes they end up working out in defiance of all logic and experience. Has this ever happened in a game you have been a part of? And if so, do you have any amusing anecdotes to share about it?
Probably the one that I got the most resistance to from our GM when I was pitching the concept to him was my emo kid with a pact of power in Rifts.
Oh, yeah, I remember that character.
Yeah. I had a little emo kid. He was like a 16-year-old douchebag named Justin, and his hair was in his face, and he had like a pink bandana that he'd wear, and he was in a shitty like emo band, and I was pitching this character to our GM, Jake, and he was like, no, you cannot play this. I'm like, no, it's fine. Let me do this. I swear it'll be great.
Just let me do this.
Just let me have this.
I think I probably had the same gaming group experience, but it was a different DM. It was when Russ was running a game, and I had talked him into letting me play as that fourth edition Beastmaster Ranger that I had teched out to High Heaven. And in order to make the character work with his double sword and his raptor pet and all that shit, I had to make him a human who had been serving as a slave in a drow colony and escaped from there. And I was like, man, just imagine this. He's like Kurt Russell. Let me just play as Kurt Russell as a crazy eye patch super sword guy who's super devoted to his dumb lizard. And everyone was like, your character's dumb until I talked. And then they were all on board, because the first thing I think I had him say was, by the hoary host of Hoggoth, or something like that. It wasn't that, because that's what Doctor Strange says. It was, God, by Vecna's hoary balls, I think was the first thing I ever had him say.
There you
go. I was like, yeah, and everyone was on board after that, because he just talked like that constantly. That was a fun character, and I had a good time with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe also in Rifts when I made that character. Remember that character I made that was a little Japanese boy that just lived with his family in Laszlo and everything was fine?
And he didn't go adventuring at all?
No, he went adventuring, but he went adventuring to like take care of his family, who were still fine and thought he was just a regular computer geek.
Yeah. And also, he was an elf.
Yeah, he was an elf. That's right. He was an elf immigrant, and he was doing it to play up the immigrant stereotypes, but using elf to do it.
Yeah.
And his family was like, oh, we bake it too much elf bread. A boopity boppity. We're like, what? How did that? What? Yeah, this is what elves talk like. Don't worry about.
They're from the dwarven district of Elflandia.
But the whole point of the character was that he didn't have a dark or tormented past, and he wasn't like emo or grumpy or anything. He was just like, yeah, I love going on adventures. Whatever. I live above the garage.
Yeah.
That was a fun one. All right. So moving on. From SGRSG. And he asks, regarding San Diego game stores, what are your thoughts on Villainous Lair? Last time I was there, I saw that they'd expanded considerably. And you know what? I straight up forgot that existed.
Yeah.
We did that question about the game stores in our neighborhood, and we talked about two of them. Villainous Lair is also in our neighborhood and is a fine game store. It's just that we don't often go down there.
Yeah, they moved places recently. They got into a bigger store. So they actually have a much nicer, larger area. It's just generally not in a direction we're driving.
Yeah,
so.
Rad Pet Iguana in there.
Yeah, no, it's a great store.
It
I
really
just
is.
Never remember it. We have T-shirts from them.
Yeah, and from back before they expanded, we went to a street fair there. They were holding karaoke during the street fair, and they gave us T-shirts for singing.
Yeah, because we were awesome, as we always are.
Well, we are awesome at singing, except in this case, it was because we were willing to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Because the rest of the place was your standard karaoke-averse nerds who were like sitting quietly and wishing that no one would sing.
It's just like four guys sitting there opening packs of Theros or something.
Yeah.
Just being like, oh, I wish they wouldn't sing. I'm trying to look at all these packs.
And I was like, you know what those guys need to hear? Those guys need to hear DeBarge. And then they just kind of look at me, but they weren't willing to say anything about it, by God.
By God.
Yeah. So it's a fine store. It's a great store down on, what is that, Washington, Adams, something like that?
It was on Adams. Yeah. I think they moved, they might still be on Adams, they just moved
further
down.
Because it used to be two stores, and they were across the street from each other. There was Villainous Gaming and Villainous Comics, and now they're just Villainous Lair.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, anyway, moving on. Let's see, another question. Same fella. What game systems have you played in recent years? A lot of people have recently expressed the idea that we're in the renaissance of tabletop gaming. And with all the awesome games coming out, I can hardly disagree. I hate the thought of people missing out on all the modern goodness. Well, you know, I'm sorry that you hate that worry, but you're just going to have to let us go. You're going to have to let it happen to us, because all we do is suffer through old games for your amusement. I haven't played a new game in forever.
I've played Fate.
Yeah, that's
basically the newest system that I've played in.
And the newest system I've played in is Iron Kingdoms.
Also true.
Yeah, I have read through Fate and Savage Worlds, and I am currently reading Dungeon Worlds on the side for a little, like, you know,
refresher. A little light reading.
Yeah, a little light reading. What I do when I'm not reading RPGs is I read other RPGs that aren't for the show, and I'm like, this is a breather. So I think there is absolutely an interesting world of gaming happening right now. I love that people are taking it in exciting new directions, that people are branching out and away from the whole sword and sorcery genre of the past, or finding new ways to reinvent that. There's a lot of cool stuff happening.
Well, I think the nicest thing is that people are really finding what they want out of a game and refining the game to be that.
Yes.
Because before, it would be like, oh, well, we want to be everything to everyone, so we're going to try and put everything into one game.
Yeah, that was a thing in like the late 90s and so. You had GURPS and so and what have you that was like, this is just a universal system. There's rules for everything you could play.
Here are dramatic rules and cinematic rules, yeah. And here are rules if you want to do mass combat, and then there's rules if you want to do like super minutia combat.
And you know what? I don't want to make fun of those systems. They were a product of their time, and they're pretty great. But nowadays, you get weird shit that's like Monster Hearts, for example, or Unknown Armies that's... What is this game? Oh, in this game, you play as a romantically addled monster high school student.
Yeah. They're, I mean, even just in the systems, it's very much like, oh, what are you doing here? Well, we've boiled down what we want a game to do for us mechanically to the point where we're like, here, this is what it does. These are the rules. We don't need anything else. And you, I mean, whether it's super crunchy for certain things or just super, like, open for others... Just very neat to see people that grew up playing games, know what the systems are, know what they want out of them.
I hate to sound all hipstery, but I love the small batch nature of gaming now, where someone's like, I'm going to Kickstarter this game, and everyone who's interested in it can buy it, and I don't need to build it in such a way that I can eternally expand on it, so that in 5 years there'll be Monster Hearts, now with spaceships. That doesn't need to happen, and so the game doesn't need to be left with a whole bunch of unused hooks that you will later hook things onto.
Yeah.
I like that. I like the structured nature of the way games are when they're coming out these days. I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that I get to read them. No. I have to read terrible games for you, the listener.
Yes.
And I love it. It's where we live. All right. Let's see. What else we got here? From Pocket Fox? Bunch of questions here. We'll just start. We'll go through these quick. What famous RPG monster or creature is the most underutilized or underappreciated? What underestimated monster is surprisingly deadly in the hands of the intelligent DM?
Odiug.
The Odiug is a pretty good choice. I would say the Sturge.
Okay.
Which is a giant mosquito. It's always been unreasonably dangerous in every game.
Yeah.
It has blood drains and things like that that can actually straight up kill a party right away. But in terms of a monster that's iconic but you never see anyone using it, I would go...
Shadow Dragon.
Ooh, Shadow Dragon. That's a pretty good
one. Yeah, that level drain breath.
Yeah, that's fucked up. I'd probably go with the Gorgon, which is... You know,
the Gorgonzola?
In D&D, a Gorgon, of course, being a metal bull that breathes poison.
Obviously.
Much like in history.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that. I love that for some reason a robot cow is a villain. A poison-breathing robot cow is one of the major villains from old D&D.
That really just sounds like something fighting the tick.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a couple of answers. Objectively, Planescape and Spelljammer are the best campaign settings ever produced for D&D any edition. Objectively, yes.
True.
That's true. I mean... I'm going to say that Dark Sun's real close, but yeah, definitely Planescape Spelljammer. What are the best campaign settings for other game lines, like Palladium or White Wolf?
Best setting for, let's see, Palladium?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and throw out Africa, because it's terrible and I hate it, and I love it so much that I hate it.
I don't know if that's even a campaign setting there. I mean, it's on the same planet. For me, it would probably be something like Phase World or Wormwood.
Nah.
Or Manhunters, or Scrapers. I could just do
oh,
this.
Oh, Scrapers. I played a game of Scrapers. I played in Scrapers.
Or the Dival Dimension, or Doozers, or Traveling Matt's Postcards.
God damn it.
For a second there, right?
Just for a second.
You were like, yeah, Doozers is definitely a Rift supplement. That sounds right.
Obviously. Rift's World Book Supplement 57 Doozers.
Yeah, it came right out after Mechanoids.
Yeah, and then we had Mystic Doozers right after that.
Mystic Doozers. Oh, we're building little towers out of magic sticks. Oh, my God. Let's see. For White Wolf, I'm going to go with my pet favorite, Autochthonia.
There you go.
Autochthonia being the robot god belly in which the alchemical exalted exist. And I love it because it's a send-up of kind of Soviet bloc culture. And it's such a weird place to try and do a role-playing game, and I just think it's fascinating.
Yeah, and if your guy gets powerful enough, he just becomes a city.
Yes, as you get more powerful, your character becomes more and more of just a city until you literally become the home of the people.
Yeah.
You fought for the people, and now you house them.
You are now of the people.
Yeah, crazy, crazy setting. I love it. Unfortunately, it's the least popular book in Exalted, which is already a game system that comes out slower than glaciers die. So we'll never see another copy of it, but the two editions that they did get were really great.
There you go.
All right. Let's see. Equipment weight and encumbrance for characters. Brilliant idea for stopping characters from carrying every single piece of obscure equipment they have ever purchased or found, or frustrating and unnecessary bookkeeping.
Depends on if you use it. Like, Torchbearer is a system that is specifically all about that and turns it into part of the game. So that's That's a thing where if it's not just I'm trying to penalize you, but the characters are encouraged to go,
right,
play this little mini game of how much you're carrying and where you're carrying and who has a torch and what hand things are in. And then that's what it's about. So characters know going in. But if you go, you find the dragon's hoard of treasure and you can only lift a quarter of it. Fuck you.
You forgot to specify that you weren't grabbing copper pieces. You grabbed all copper pieces.
Ha ha.
Yeah. Well, no, D&D in particular, I guess I'd follow that question with a question. What obscure item are you worried that the players are going to pull out in D&D that you should have kept out with encumbrance?
Yeah.
They're like, aha, finally, I will pull out my pavilion tent. Okay.
Well.
That's fair. That's a real heavy tent. You sure earned that. I have a signet ring.
I have a barrel of pickled herring.
I bring forth a water clock. So who cares?
Great.
What are they possibly going to do with any of that nonsense that's in the item list?
Nothing. Yeah, absolutely nothing.
Let them carry it because they're never going to use it. And if they do, it's going to be fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
So, all right. Number four, what is the worst by any yardstick you wish to measure it by? All right. Dick size, player character race in any RPG and why?
Okay.
Okay. So by dick size, what is the worst RPG player race in any game?
Human.
Yeah, humans just got them terrible dicks, yo.
Terrible dicks on humans, everyone.
All right.
Come on, it's the only one we can verify.
It's true. Well, no, I'm pretty sure we could verify dwarf dick if we needed to. That's offensive. I apologize. Let's see. All right, by any other yardstick than dick size. Was it best or worst?
Worst.
All right, what's the worst player character race in any RPG and why?
It's always the evil version of a regular race that is also black.
Oh, yeah, the drow elves.
Drow elves or the Dwergar.
Yeah, mostly in D&D where you see that shit. Although there is the humans but black that were in, what game was that? Cthulhu Tech?
Yeah.
So they do show up as a trope in other games.
No, anytime you have, it's this guy's, but they're black and evil. I'm like, oh, come on.
See, I don't even, that's annoying and it's definitely of its time. You know, like the drow elves being the evil underground super black elves. But to me, it's when they also spin them around, and now they're always tortured good guys. Which is what's happened to the drow at this point. It's like, if you meet some drow, you're like, oh, okay, I'm not even worried about you being evil, because there's no way you are.
No, always are. It's just PCs that aren't.
Yeah.
Every PC that is a drow is always, well, I reject the society of my people, and I want to be good. Okay.
All right, let's see. Moving on here. Should all magic weapons and items be unique, one-of-a-kind storied artifacts like Excalibur, Mjolnir, the Lance of Longinus, or the Holy Grail, or is it better for a game when magic items are generic in stock? Flaming swords, thundering hammers, cloaks of invisibility, and so on.
Well, again, that sort of depends on what your theme of your world is.
Yeah, that's a mix. That's definitely a mix answer.
Because if it's a world where magic is scarce, then yeah, you don't really want to have your characters finding that shit all over the place. But if it's a world that's more like, hey, it's Harry Potter. There's just magical crap all over the place. What do you know? I went to the library, I found a whole book of how to make magic swords, and then I went to the forge, and there were 20 million of them. Who gives a shit? Whatever. Have a sword.
I kind of like the idea of hybriding these two things and saying that there's magic items all the fuck over the place, but all of them are legendary magic items.
Look, this is a really old world, and people have been at this for a while.
Yeah, there's just like a million, and also they're all ones you've heard of. Like you're just walking along, and you just trip over Excalibur like it ain't no thing.
Yeah, you're like, oh, fucking Excalibur.
God damn it, I'm just going to try and throw this away. Oh, return to me. I hate magic items.
Why did I try and throw this into a lake?
Woman just comes back out and hands it to you.
Oh,
did I say a little help? I did not.
Thank you.
Okay. These days, Lovecraft and Cthulhu get seemingly everywhere, including in our RPGs. What RPG do you think has Lovecraftian elements in it that really should not be there, and what is the RPG you think would be vastly improved by adding a few Lovecraftian traits and ideas? All right, so Cthulhu Tech would be way better without the Cthulhu. If you were just playing...
Right, if you were just playing Tech?
No, a game of Tech. A little nice game of regular Tech.
Nice game of Tech.
Yeah, I'd also like to play Call of.
Yeah.
That's a fun game.
Duty?
Yeah, just Call of. Yeah, you know, Call of where you go insane for no reason at all, just because that's what happens to people. You have mental issues and it's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
That's a fun game I love to play.
It's a real fun game.
What game would do better with Cthulhu in it?
Call of Duty. Call of Cthulhu Duty.
Call of Cthulhu's Duty.
Yeah. Poop. Ew. It's a poop joke.
It's a poop joke. Let's see. What D&D, or not D&D, but RPG game would be improved by adding a little Cthulhu?
Most games, if they would benefit from it, generally have it.
Exalted?
Eh.
I mean, if you just, you know, just make him into a behemoth.
Yeah, he's a hecatonkier.
Yeah, he's a hecatonkyrie. Hecatonkeray. Hecatoncher.
Good.
That's a fun word to say.
You having some problems over there?
No, I'm just trying to remember what a hecatonkyre actually is before.
It's a behemoth that's dead.
Oh, I know it's a dead behemoth in Exalted, but isn't it also something in mythology? Isn't it like a bird?
The hecatonkyre?
Yeah, isn't it like a bird with 100 legs or something?
Yeah, why not? Sure.
I don't know. Who can remember? Who can remember what monster
who could
was?
Possibly remember anything?
Not this guy. We all know pizza is among the best RPG foods, but what food should one avoid bringing to a game session and why?
All right, well, for food you don't want to bring to a gaming session, anything that's, like, super disgustingly sloppy, so like a sloppy Joe or like a sloppy Bill.
Yeah, any food prefaced by sloppy.
Yeah.
Also, any food that's going to give you stank breath and farts and burps. Like, I would avoid any food called the hot Italian.
Yeah, I would also avoid any hot Italians.
Yeah, don't bring any hot Italians to you, but elves are cool. You want to bring some elves in there. That's
dwarves
fine.
Are all right.
Yeah, let's see. I wouldn't recommend gravy boats, just on principle.
That's your food you brought? You didn't even put gravy in it. You just brought gravy boats.
Yeah, I brought everyone here a gravy boat. Yeah,
there you go. That's the food you don't want to bring to a game. Porcelain. Please do not bring shards of glass to the gaming table. Not a good one. I mean, I know if you break it up, it kind of looks like candy,
what
but
if,
don't
what
do
if
it.
It's a pizza topping?
Yeah, if I put shards of glass on the pizza, make sure to only put it on half.
Because, yeah, not everyone wants shards of hot glass.
Not everyone. Some, though.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry that we don't have a serious answer for that, because since my go-to gaming food is to generate a pork loin somehow, usually oven bake it or cook it up real nice and
just
tender.
Generate a pork loin.
Just generate. Yeah, I just cut open the side of me and a pork loin is there.
Pork loin!
Just bloop. It just pops into existence.
Yeah. I yell as hard as I can at a pig, and then all of a sudden, pork loin.
It's come up on the show before that usually my go-to when we go to gaming things is to bring pulled pork.
Yeah.
I love making pulled pork and bringing it because it's the perfect meal, and it makes for a good break because it's a good conversational break point to go and slap pork loin all over a nice bun and eat that for a little while.
Yeah.
All right. Next guest question comes to us from Human in Hobbiton. Dear Cheese Fellows. All right. What happened to the in-jokes? These days, we're lucky to get a hot dog question. What happened to cheese dudes? What happened to the talking hot dog and the 10-year-old girl? Well, that's us. We're right here.
Why would I keep mentioning who I am?
Yeah, that's just, I don't know. Second, have you two succumbed to Pokemon Go? If not, I envy your self-control. If so, what level are you? Oh, there's levels? Oh
yeah, God. You have to be level 5 before you can join one of the 3 teams.
Oh, my God. Okay. Third, if you could be a 1/3 reverse mermaid with the torso of an animal, what animal would you choose for the other?
Regards, 1/3?
Hey, I'm just reading the question. Regards, Bubbaloo Humble Trump.
All right.
Here we go. Let's see. What happened to all the in-jokes? We're trying to come up with new ones? Is that what it was,
yeah,
John?
Yeah, mostly.
Because, like, John won't let me do donkey talk now.
No.
But I'm going to do it anyway.
No.
I'm doing it.
No, you're not.
I'm doing it.
No.
I'm not doing it right now, but I'm going to do it.
Don't you do it.
Oh, we're doing it.
Don't do
it's
it.
It's just not going to happen right now. It's going to happen when you least expect it. I'll find
a
way.
There's going to be a moment. I'm going to be in my room trying to sleep, and all of a sudden, I'm going to get donkey, donkey, down to the honky, donkey.
It's going to be something else. I have a whole new donkey song written up, and it's going to be for Donkey Talk Kids. Also, we might as well announce this now. I am totally holding a Donkey Talk contest.
Yeah, there's a Donkey Talk Kids Incorporated, and
DonkeyTalkKids. Whoa. Looks like we've made it. It's Donkey Talk Kids Incorporated. Yeah, that's what it'll be.
Yeah.
I think we just figured out our new theme song for Donkey Talk. Never mind, no contest.
No contest, get out.
All right. Let's see, have we succumbed to Pokemon Go? I have not.
No.
My phone's too old and shitty. I was thinking about getting a new one this month, but I have other shit to do.
My excuse is that I am too old and shitty.
Probably true. I also never was all that big of a fan of Pokemon in general. I've never played any of the Pokemon games.
Neither have I.
And so it's just...
Also, this would require me to walk around outside.
That doesn't bother me as much, but yeah, my phone's too old and cranchety. I can't do it.
Yeah, plus, for me, I just don't... I don't care. It's not a game. You're just walking around, and then occasionally your phone buzzes, and you get to look at a picture of a Pokemon. I can do that. If I want to walk around the park and then go on my phone and go, hey, Google, show me a picture of Zubat, and then it'll show me a picture of Zubat, and I'll be like, yeah, I caught you. And then I'll download that picture. There you go. I'm playing Pokemon Go. And then I'll just walk up to people and be like, hey, I'm on Team Mystic. What does that matter? It doesn't. Whoop-a-doo.
Is that like how you can play Mario by just jumping on turtles? Because I told you that was gross and unpleasant. And I didn't want you to do it in my yard.
Well, fine then.
Quit throwing fireballs at all my flowers.
Nah, man. I just eat your flowers and then I throw fireballs.
Third, if you could be a one-third reverse mermaid with the torso of an animal, what animal would you choose for the other? John?
Okay, so I have fish bottom.
Don't try to explain it.
No. So I have fish bottom.
Yeah.
No, wait. I'm a reverse mermaid. Okay, so fish top.
One-third reverse mermaid.
Yeah, so the top third of me is fish.
Okay.
All right, and then I get one-third animal for the torso, and then I apparently have human legs.
Yeah, but the only thing I need is what would you choose for the other?
Okay, so the midsection of me...
Don't explain it, just tell me
the animal that I'm getting for the midsection of me is definitely going to be... Ooh, I kind of want to go also aquatic, but then it doesn't really matter, because I could go with, like, eel. I'd do, like, an electric eel, and I could be all like...
Just pick a different kind of fish.
Nah, the top part of me is like a weird, tiny shark. That's what it is, like a horn shark.
Heliocoprion.
And then the middle of me is a whale shark.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. So you have a little tiny head and a huge body.
And then human feet coming out the back.
Tiny human feet.
There you go. Sold. I'm done. Horn shark, whale shark, human feet. Done.
All right, so let's see. Top half, top third we've already established has to be mermaid.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm going to go with, for the middle half or middle third, octopus?
Okay.
Yeah, so I get a bunch of tentacles?
Well, no, that's the bottom part of an octopus. You just get sort of a squishy part with a beak in it. That's what your middle is. And then you got human feet.
I got a bonus mouth.
Yeah, you got a mouth in between your human legs.
Perfect. Oh, who doesn't? Yeah. All right, next question. Since you spend most of your time immersed in older systems, how do you feel about the OSR movement, which has resulted in things like Lamentations of the Flame Princess and Labyrinth Lord?
Eh.
I always forget what OSR stands for.
Old, stupid role-playing games.
Ah, that's right. You know what? I'm fine with it. I'm glad that there are people out there who are having fun with it.
Yeah, like I said before, people know what they want out of a game now, and if what they want out of a game is, like, original D&D... Great. Fucking go for it. I don't care.
Have fun. Have fun with it. Have fun with your tables. It's cool. We're good with you. We're cool.
It's fine. There are so many games out now that it's not like if D&D comes out with a bad edition, you have to go, aw, damn it, now I have to play like Vampire the Masquerade. That's my only other option.
The fuck do you mean if it comes out with a bad edition? all right. Well, anyway. Let's see. Yeah. Just a fan. They're fine. I'm not going to play them myself because I got enough of that shit in high school. I played a lot of fucking first edition D&D back then, and you can have it.
Sir.
You can take it and walk away with it and rename it Lamentations of the Flame Princess and cram it up your ass, and I hope you do, and I hope you enjoy it. All right, let's see.
That's my fetish.
That's also my fetish. Okay, wait. Does this whole anti-niblet thing mean you've never had succotash?
No, what do I look like, a black and white cat that's trying to get a Tweety Bird? Get out of here.
He doesn't eat succotash, he just exclaims that it is suffering.
I do not want to end the suffering of succotash. I am a cruel and horrible dictator of the succotash nation.
I can't even remember what succotash is. I feel like it's just the stuff you'd get from one of those bags of frozen veggies you buy at the store, and then you just dump that out and eat it, and you're like, yeah, succotash.
I don't know why, in my head I just sort of imagine it's the leavings that no one wants. So it's just like giblets and niblets and anything with lits in it. Chicklets.
Yes, giblets, nicklets, and chicklets.
Yeah, it's Nickelback and chicklets. And
all right. So, no, I guess you've never had any succotash. You don't
no,
even know what it is.
I have
got
no
lima
idea.
Beans in it.
Great.
All right, let's see. Next question. What Pokemon Go team are you? I don't know if you're actually playing. I think your answer might be honestly more fun if you aren't. John, what Pokemon Go team are you on?
I'm on Team John. Eat it, nerds.
I'm on the Fighting Mongooses.
I'm on the Blue Barracudas.
I'm on Team Doozers.
Aw, I wish I could get on Team Doozers. I misclicked.
You misclicked and you didn't get on Doozers. We catch so many tiny little sticks.
Oh, man, you got to catch all the sticks.
All 151 of the original sticks.
Oh, the original sticks. Those are the best sticks. And then they started coming out with, like, sticks that are a pair of keys. And
an ice cream cone? The fuck
that
is that?
Ice cream stick.
Yeah, that's not cool. All right, let's see. So at least one of the creators of the systems you've reviewed showed up in the comments and was slightly pissy about how your understanding of their ancient and insanely complex system was somehow not perfect. When that sort of thing happens, how do you feel about it? Are you embarrassed, indifferent, trollishly delighted, or other?
So, well, I'll tell you how Jeff feels. Scared.
I get
terrified, like a little wee baby.
That
like,
time.
Like a dog in a thunderstorm.
That time, yes, because this podcast is my baby and I love it, and that was our fifth fucking episode.
Yeah. No, I had to come over, I had to wrap him in a tight little vest to make sure he felt secure, and then I put some little earmuffs on him so that he wouldn't hear any of the loud noises.
Played some womb sounds for me. Really calmed me down. I needed a lot of warm milk. But no, I mean, ultimately, that we're talking about Garvin, Lee Garvin, the author of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe.
The fact that you can't remember this is amazing.
Tales
to me.
From the Floating Vagabond.
There you go.
Come on, I can do
you
this.
You were the one who had actually played that before.
I know. I'm just bad with names. But anyway, I got Lee Garvin in fucking one.
Yeah.
I want that credit. Give it to me. Give me your adulations. Shower me with them. Come on. Let's do it.
You get nothing.
Listeners.
Good day,
listeners,
sir.
Please send me your adulation for remembering the name of the author of Tales from the Floating Vagabond without trying.
Listeners, please put shame and horrible names upon Jeff for forgetting everything else in his life.
Listeners, find out who John really is and kick him in the butt.
No, my butt.
No, okay. So Lee Garvin got a little salty with us because we had an old edition of his game and it had a mistake in it that made it that your character had no hit points at all and died from anything.
Yes.
And he sent us a fairly polite email to the effect of, you guys found the oldest mistake and it's been the bane of my career. Your character should have 20 more hit points than that and it's just been plaguing me for my entire professional career. And the only reason he did it is because he was currently kickstarting a new edition of Tales from the Floating Vagabond, so he was actively tracking social media. Because at the time, we were stunned, because this was our fifth episode. We had like 9 listeners, and 2 of them were my parents. So we had no idea. I was like, this guy could break us. This guy's in the industry. He could destroy us, John. You don't understand.
With a word, we would be no more.
I think he's a made man.
I think he's a wizard.
Yeah.
I think he could undo my history.
So yeah, I was a little perturbed. Ultimately, it was just because he wanted to kickstart his thing. I got him to retweet our episode a couple of times. We actually got a few listeners out of it. And I supported his Kickstarter, which turned out to be like buying a ticket to watching someone describe mental illness once a month for the rest of my fucking life.
Oh, so you bought a ticket to Akewood?
Oh my God. Very good. Very good. Got me there. Because what's happening is, that was episode 5, I supported him before episode 6, and what are we on right now? I think episode 74 is coming out next.
Uh-huh.
Every 2 weeks we put one of these out, and we've been doing it consistently for 3 years now, and that's the next one, 74, and do I own a copy of second edition, Tales from the Floating Vagabond? No, I do not, because he immediately gave up on it, became a weird recluse, who has his friends send out emails explaining why he doesn't have to give us the game.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's what my $20 bought. Back then I was terrified of this guy, but now I'm just like sad for him.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I sure hope he gets better and sends me my goddamn game.
You still get a little freaked out anytime anyone notices us.
No, it's been last couple times it's happened, it's been funny. Because it's happened 5 times.
Yeah, it has happened several times, and every time you're like, oh my God, what do you think about this thing? And I'm always like, Jeff, I don't care. No one cares about this.
No, the author of Stormbringer found out, or 4th edition Stormbringer found out about us and had some very political but not quite nice words. And I just thought it was fucking funny because fuck Stormbringer. I'll stand by it. It's going to be on my goddamn tombstone. That game is shit and everyone who likes it is shit. And it seems to be the biggest divisive thing. But, you know, the guy who authored Haven City of Violence commented on our Facebook feed about it once.
Yeah.
And I was really worried because we called him a dumb white doofus wearing a trench coat. And it turns out he is actually a respectable Pathfinder author who was a black guy.
Yeah.
So That was dumb. And I didn't want to have that conversation with him, where he was like, you guys spend an awful lot of time calling me a very specific thing that it turned out I am not. But, you know, actually having talked to people who are contemporaries and friends of his, he is. He just is black. He's just
he's exactly that type of person.
Yes. So it's happened several times, and it's different every time, except that, yes, I'm a huge worrywart, and I get scared every time.
Yeah.
I'm like, a famous person noticed us, and then John has to be like, none of these people are famous, Jeff.
No one cares. Even if they were to go on social media right now and go, my minions, destroy them, three people would send us dumb emails. Yeah. I don't care.
I'm still scared of that Bruce Greenwood guy, though.
Oh, that Bruce Greenwood. He's gunning for you now.
Ever since I brought him into existence but didn't give him anything to do. He's like, what is my purpose?
Hi, look at me. I'm Bruce Greenwood. Hello.
Take three strokes off my golf game. All right. Let's see here. What else I got? We all know of old RPGs that try to deal with non-Eurocentric cultures and history and end up mashing it all up into a big jumble of old racist stereotypes and gross generalizations. In your experience, what are some of the worst old RPGs and sourcebooks for this? Do we got to bring up the White Wolf ones that are set in, like, friggin' Holocaust camps?
Probably.
That's probably the
even one. Then, some of them were at least decent. Like, I remember the one for Wraith was apparently really depressing and, like, handled fairly well. And yet, you have other ones where it's like, oh, here's a history of vampires, and it turns out that they were in the Nazis, and they definitely wanted to keep camps going because they got blood from it. And you're like, don't fucking do this, man.
Yeah, I would say the one that's always brought me the most grief was Rift's Japan.
Oh, Rift's Japan, where everything turns into a samurai ninja?
Yeah, exactly, because the difference between Rift's Japan and other Rift's, like, world settings is that Japan, like, teleported out of existence and then teleported back into existence after the Rift, so all the big cities were still there.
Yeah.
So that's the premise, but then you're like, all right, so it's modern Japanese culture trying to deal with a crazy new world. So what do? They build robot ninjas and cyber samurais and robo cyber dragons.
Like,
why? Why are they doing that? They haven't been building they've been working on robot samurai technology for the past 20 years. It's all dick suck robots.
Yeah, but that's what's going to happen. Eventually, you're going to have a samurai sucking your dick. That's the future.
That is
the future of Rifts.
Yeah. Little tiny robots that look like they have to poop everywhere they walk. That's what Japan is desperately working on. They are not trying to build Gundams. They just aren't trying that hard.
No.
So that one, my least favorite kind of overgeneralization of a culture is Rift's Japan.
Yeah,
although every time there's an Oriental Adventures type book and they always do the exact same thing with it, which is like, Oriental Adventures, everyone here is super honorable.
Yeah. Oh, God, what was that one? There was some source book that was straight up just like a joke adventure that was like full of people that were for reals in the game, like Miso Solly.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, God. I can't even remember what it's from.
It's always Asia. No one can ever write an Asia book right.
I mean, you also get the deepest, darkest Africa stuff where it's like, and then you find a clan of people with bones in their noses and they're all cannibals. You're like, oh, thanks.
Yeah, you know, for your favorite Rift setting, you get a lot of that in there. Where there's like three types of crazy wood tribes people.
Oh, you get that a lot in the Pathfinder one that was like, here's our fake Africa. And you're like, ooh.
It's ruled by gorillas. Oh, really?
Oh.
His name is Mbungu. Oh, come on. Don't.
Okay, great.
Don't do this. Yeah. Well, anyway, okay. Let's see here. Next question comes to us. And conversely, what are some RPGs in their source books that avoid this and end up becoming pretty damn cool and treating the subject matter with respect?
None of them.
Yeah, that's pretty rare. I mean, you know what? I'm going to pass that one off to actual listeners because I don't have it off the top of my tongue.
There you go. Tell us. Tell us what the best handling of some non-Eurocentric things are.
Yeah. Let's hear it. Who did it well? Was it L5R?
Who wore it best?
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Hey, guys. Are you did you do San Diego Comic-Con this year or any of its outlying events? As locals, what do you think of the impact it has on the city each year?
Well, given that I am north of downtown,
mm-hmm.
I generally deal with the one day of traffic where everyone comes in.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't go down there anymore because I don't care. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, my general experience with Comic-Con at this point is it has become far, far too big for its britches. And
it takes over all of downtown.
Yeah. And it's pointless. I mean, I was in Comic-Con last year. I was working at a friend's booth. I actually wasn't attending, but I took some time off to go wander around and look at things. And it's just become crowds of people waiting in line to buy what almost invariably ends up being one of those fucking Funko Pop things.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
I've had it with those fucking things. I don't care. I don't care about a big head version of one of the people on fucking Game of Thrones.
No, the thing for me is, one, the only reason to buy the full pass is to get in on Wednesday so you can buy all the limited edition shit and then turn around and sell it for like three times as much as you bought it for.
And nowadays, half the booths won't sell that shit on Wednesdays because it pisses off the fans on Thursdays.
Which even then, all you're doing on Thursday is sitting in line so you can go buy some limited edition stuff and hope they don't run out.
Oh my God, I've hit this point now where you pass by lines that just exist by themselves. There's a person standing at the front of the line with a sign that says front of line. There's a person at the end of the line with a sign that says end of line. And when you ask them why they're standing in line in the middle of a hallway in the middle of nowhere, it's because the line at the actual thing that they want to wait in line for is too long, so they're waiting in an auxiliary feeder line.
Yeah. And you've got just massive, throbbing, tumescent crowds of people.
Just veiny.
These veiny, sweating people.
Yeah. There's just people hulking backwards while looking at a dumb thing. There's people who will stop in the middle of the one aisle that's moving and sit the fuck down like that makes sense.
Oh my God, that is the worst. And at this point, unless you are at least fairly well known, you're not getting a booth most of the time, or you're off in a corner that no one cares about.
Yeah.
Like the indie artists and the little like comic book store sellers, this isn't a place where you do that anymore.
Right, and that whole Hall H thing is just infuriating. It's like, hey, we had to make something special for you, the dedicated few who were able to get here to San Diego and then spend 16 hours in a line.
Yay.
No, don't reward those people for that. That's dumb.
I like that so far this year I've only had like one thing so far that I've known of that has only been shown at the Hall H and they haven't immediately released.
Yeah, I think it was like some Spider-Man footage or
something. Yeah, it was the Spider-Man Homecoming footage and that was it. Everything else has been released. I'm like, good. Stop trying to be like, oh, we want this to be a secret just for you Comic-Con
people.
Just
for you special people. And then in a month when everyone in the world has seen it on blurry cell phone footage, they're going to be like, hey, we try to do special things for Hall H. That's what we're all about. It's like, why? This happens every year. Everyone is standing there with their cell phones out. You saw them doing it.
You know this is going to happen. Just stop it. Put out an actual good-looking version of it.
Own the message. Honestly, my opinion of Comic-Con, it's time for it to go to Vegas.
Yeah, it needs to go someplace where it can actually hold everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say that because I'm a San Diego native, blah, 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 whatever. But yeah, it's too big for San Diego now.
Yeah, but San Diego will never let it go because, oh my God, the money.
And even then, does it really generate that much money? No, it's all...
Well, it generates money for the businesses around there for hotels and restaurants.
It's hotels and a couple of the restaurants, and that is it. Those are the people making money. There's all these other little industries around San Diego. They're like, oh, Comic-Con's coming to town. We'll do a comic-themed thing. Trust me, I was just working in the museum and theater industries. And they're like, oh, we'll put on a play that's interesting to Comic-Con people. And I was like, guys, don't bother. They brought $80 with them because the robot model they want costs $80.
Also, you are not downtown, so they're not going to you.
Yeah, well, that theater was downtown. But
yeah,
it
but even
matter.
Then.
That theater is not Comic-Con. They're not going to you.
No, if you're like, oh, we're even a comic book store or a game store or whatever, and we're like 10 miles outside of downtown. No, don't do anything. You don't care. In fact, your business is worse off because everyone that would normally be in your store is at Comic-Con.
Yeah. Anyway, there you go. We have kind of a low view of it, but it has been fun. I went from like 1996 to about 2007, and then I was like, all right, you know what? I do not care about the NBC fall lineup. I don't know why it's got. I don't know why it has 1,100 square feet of floor space. I don't know why there's a 30-foot tall David Schwimmer in here. You can fucking have it.
Man, I want that. I want to put that in the yard. Scare everyone off.
To frighten away the crows with my giant David Schwimmer. All right. Let's see. Let's get a few more questions in real quick. So I think we'll switch from some of these Reddit questions to a couple off the email feed, and we'll get to the rest of the Reddit questions in a couple of weeks. Let's go to Maleficent Morgul, who asks, is it Morgul? I wonder if this guy's a War Machine player. Hello, podcasters, formerly known as Jeff and John.
I wonder what now I'm a symbol.
We are a symbol. One gross double man symbol. Okay, I have two questions for you this week. Number one, and I love this one, which is why I picked you. Which 80s music videos would make the best RPGs? I'm partial to a Take On Me RPG, where you can play as an 80s chick or a dreamy Norwegian, and you fight pencil-drawn rotoscoped bikers. John?
That sounds good.
You like that?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with, let's see, You're So Bad. You're So Bad is the Tom Petty song from an album released in 1989, and the video is of him and his band driving around a Mad Max universe in tiny little Mad Maxed up go-karts, and then they like raid an arcade and get in a fight. And I just like the idea of Mad Max all driving around in like Shriner cars. Like, that's the only car that survived the apocalypse, is a little warehouse full of those little tiny Shriner cars.
Okay.
So that's going to be my answer. I think that's adorable.
I mean, I think the easiest answer is probably Thriller.
Okay, Thriller's also a really good answer.
Yeah, that's the easy one where you have to dance fight zombies.
Yeah. Let's see, how about one where we have to install microwave ovens and custom kitchen delivery? Maybe some of that. Like, you play as
a little bit
boxy little CGI mans who have to fill boxes full of microwaves and kitchen stuff.
Yeah, them Kitchums.
Kitchums.
Ash Kitchums.
It's a really Pokemon-y episode. It's all Pokemons and Fraggles up in here.
Yep, it's a weird day here.
Well, that's what the episode's going to be called right there.
Pokemons and Fraggles.
Yeah. Let's see. Now that Triumph the Insult Comic Dog has an Emmy-nominated special where he goes around complaining about the kids these days with their safe spaces and their trigger warnings, when does Wowzers the Dog That Denies the Holocaust get his special? We're still in contact with Jeff Dunham. We're working on this for days. We keep telling him, look, Jeff, you've already cornered the market in racist, shitty puppets where you can still see your fucking mouth moving. How would you like to go the extra mile to the most offensive puppet possible, a dog that denies the Holocaust?
But then it's fine, because when people are like, hey, that's really offensive, you just go, look, it's ironic.
I'm ironically offensive. Look, you buy this Ahmed Saves America DVD. It's just Wowzers the dog. I'm not Wowzers the dog that dies the Holocaust. He's a character that I carry around with me.
Come on.
So we're working on it. We've been in contact with him for a while. It's hard because he fucking sucks and I don't want to talk to him.
You know, I've met Jeff Dunham.
You've really met Jeff
Dunham? I have actually met Jeff Dunham, and he's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy in person?
Yeah.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure most comedians I hate are nice people in person, with the probable exception of Dane Cook.
With the probable exception of Lisa Lampanelli.
I feel like Lisa Lampanelli's probably really nice in person.
Nah, I bet she'd be real mean.
No, I just feel like Dane Cook would be the only one who's mean. And even then, only because he's really driven and narcissistic.
Not anymore. Now I'm sure he's probably just sad.
Yeah, probably. But still not a lot of fun to hang out with. Like, Gilbert Gottfried's been around forever. I'd love to hang out with him.
Yeah, that was great fun when I hung out with Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, I hate you.
I know you do.
Oh, wait a minute. I hung out with Buzz Aldrin.
That's fine. I don't
Woo!
Care.
Woo! All right, cool. Let's see here.
Nerd.
That's a guy who hung out with Jeff Dunham.
Hey, now, I didn't hang out with him. I met him. Now, I did hang out with Paula Poundstone, though.
That would also be rad, but that still calls you out as a nerd. I mean, what has she done in the past 10 years other than appear on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
Well, she listened to me talk about my ex-girlfriend.
All right. I think we're probably about done for the week. We have a few more questions here that we will get to in 2 weeks. Otherwise, until then, this has been...
Wait, wait, don't tell me.
God damn it. This has been the Afterthought. I don't know what the hell is wrong with you today.
You're just losing it today,
man. I'm just
not
good.
I think you're melting. I think your brain has melted.
I went to the beach today, and that was probably a mistake. It saps all the energy out of you. It's like eating pancakes for an entire day.
Oh, I know how that goes.
Yeah. That's what you did all day, right? You just
ate
pancakes.
You went to the beach and I ate pancakes all day.
Went to Denny's and got that unlimited pancakes.
And I was like, thank you.
Put them to the test.
Put them on the glass.
Sir, it's really called All the Pancakes You Should Eat.
Don't you tell me when I've had enough.
All right, so this has been The Afterthought, the companion podcast to System Mastery. You can find us at systemmasterypodcast.com. Oh, thank God I get to go on autopilot and do the fucking easy part. Here we go. You can find us at systemmasterypodcast.com. Otherwise, on System Mastery on Twitter or Gmail or Facebook. Contact us on all those places and ask us your questions. You can find us at r/systemmastery on Reddit. We also answer questions and participate there. You can talk to us. We will talk back. We are nice. Support us on Patreon. If you do that, you get our bonus content episodes that come out every 2 weeks as accompaniments to our System Mastery episodes, or you can listen to our Movie Mastery episodes, which are reviews of terrible movies where you pick the movie and then we have to watch it. It is horrible. All right, and thank you so much for listening. We will see you in a week or 3 days.
Or a couple of days. A
couple of days when the Movie Mastery comes out.
A couple 3 days. A
couple of 3 days. A fortnight, if you will.
Yeah. Oh, also, hey, our 3-year anniversary is coming up.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. If you want to get us something nice, do it.
Yeah. Buy us nice things for our 3-year anniversary.
Just wait. We'll tweet out our Amazon wish list.
It's going to be all stuff that's about foot fetishes and butt plugs. We've been training.
We've been training real hard for this.
I don't know. It's for some reason, the Amazon wish list for me always seems to be associated with porn. I can't tell you why. Probably because mine is.
Probably.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, everybody. Good night.